multiple colleges reached out to explore merger options. And in June 2021, a month after this program aired, Mills College merged with Boston-based Northeastern University. And the merger was finalized in June of 2022. So Experiment Through Music and Mills College will continue on.
Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC Los Altos Hills. Good evening, I'm Cousin Mary. I will be with you till 9 o'clock, 6 to 8. First Mayhem special I hear of the year, music from Mills College. But first, big thanks to Teacher's Aides. He left us with a superimposition of W.O.T. and Thoabath. His show heard every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Well, tonight I'm just going to let the music speak for itself, basically. I was reading the New York Times recently, and there was an article that said, is music over at Mills College? And the subtitle was, a hotbed of experimental sound for nearly a century. This school in Oakland, California is preparing to close its doors. Now, I started reading the article, and they're mentioning this teacher and this student and this musician. I felt like I was reading a printout of the KFJC library. So I thought, I'm going to explore in our library primarily and find out a little bit more, because I'd played these artists, but I'd never thought of them, you know, coherently together. I'm going to start tonight with an album that I actually did the review for. I remember Justin Outlier was our music director, and he handed me what I thought was LPs, and it was so heavy, I kind of went, ugh, when he handed it to me, and I realized it was 78s. We do have one turntable that plays 78s. I just had to change the stylus, but what we're going to hear is part of the Protea Symphonic Suite Number 2. Darius Milhaud fled Europe in 1940 and joined the music faculty at Mills College. This particular suite was composed in 1919, and it's one of those ones that caused such a stir, the police had to be called. Anyway, let's hear it. Scratches and All on 78 on the Wave of the West. Here's Darius Milhaud. 89.7 KFJC. Gee, sides of 78s are not very long, are they? That was the Prelude and Fugue from Proti, Symphonic Suite Number 2. This is an old RCA Victor set of 78s. I've heard this is one of the earliest recordings of the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra with Pierre Monteau conducting. Let's see. This was recorded in 1945. Darius Milhaud. Well, up next, why not have a little contrast, but it's not really. Dave Brubeck, I read one time, believe it was in the book Take Five, which was a biography of Paul Desmond. But Dave Brubeck was quoted as saying when he went into the armed service during the Second World War, he said, if I live through the war, I'm going to come back to Mills College and study composition with Darius Milhaud. And I think Dave Brubeck would have said that Milhaud was a big influence on him. From what I've read, Brubeck's love of rich chords and free-sounding harmonies came from Milhaud, and especially Milhaud's polytonal penchant for putting one chord in one hand and a different chord in another. As a matter of fact, Dave Brubeck's son, who was born in 1947, is named Darius. I'm going to play the Duke of all things because I heard the original title was The Duke Meets Darius Milhaud. Let's hear it on The Wave of the West, KFJC. Seven KFJC, that was Dave Brubeck, the Duke, formerly known as the Duke Meets Darius Milhaud. Interchanges 54 is the album from Columbia. I don't know if I heard one chord in one hand and a different chord in the other. Not quite that hip, but maybe you did. This is Cousin Miriam doing a special called Music from Mills College. I'm going to play something by Robert Ashley. He directed the Center for Contemporary Music from 1969 to 1981. And as I read, he is best known for his television operas and other theatrical works, many of which incorporate electronics and extended techniques. We're going to hear Insatiable Desire from the album Concrete on the Wave of the West, KFJC.
He asks me to play the piano in a jazz quartet. The quartet plays in local roadhouses and in clubs for the men in the nearby army camp. We're the only club band available in the area, so we work regularly. We are in the army together. He plays drums in the army band. I play clarinet or cymbals when the band is marching. I play bassoon when the band is sitting down. I play piano in the army dance band. I am terrible at everything, but so is the band, so it hardly matters. We become good friends, I suppose because we come from the same social class. We have relatives from villages in the mountains of western Tennessee. The relatives now live in Detroit to escape from dreary poverty on used-up tobacco farms and from the ever-encroaching Tennessee Valley Authority. We probably sound alike in our speech. We probably seem alike to the rest of the Army Band, which is African-American in the majority. The great difference between us, which is certainly obvious to me and must be obvious to anyone who cares, is that he has substantial financial resources. He has a new car. He and his wife live in a nice house off post. He dresses well and he behaves with utter discretion. We are very different. One day he asked me if he can tell me an important secret, a secret that I must keep from his wife and from my wife and from everybody else. We go to his house. His wife is away. He reveals to me that he is known in the way men are known in cities all over the United States as a serious poker player. He is called whenever generals and other high officers get together and there is a lot of money on the table. The secret is that he has promised his wife that he no longer gambles because she has come to fear for his safety. He cheats. He cheats with the cards. That is why he has more money than I have at the same army pay scale. He tells his wife that he has the extra money because of playing in the jazz quartet after hours. It's hard to imagine she believes him. I play in the quartet too, and she and my wife are friends, but apparently she believes him. Or she simply knows she can't stop him. He gives me a few illustrations of his skill with cards. He shuffles. I cut the deck. He deals me four aces. He shows me how the special decks he uses are marked and how they are contoured. I can't feel the contours until he points the fact out to me. He must practice hundreds of hours with these decks before he has the courage to use them. Where does he do this? He explains that when the deal comes to him, he switches decks. He can pretty much determine who has the best hand. This is dangerous business. If anything happens to him, I am to get his wife out of town as quickly as possible. He explains that he rarely wins extravagantly himself, but that he has an accomplice, a young black man who he tells everybody in the local poker world is from a relatively wealthy family and plays well and can afford the high-stakes game. Usually the young black man takes most of the money in the room. They split the proceeds afterward. I understand his discretion. He knows perfectly when to win, when to lose, and when one of the generals is to go home happy. This is the last we speak of this matter for some months. A secret is a secret. It doesn't need to be discussed. A few months later, the larger unit of which the band is a part takes part in a war game in the bayous of Louisiana. The band is assigned guard duties all over the area of the war games. One night he comes to my tent and tells me he and the young black man have been called to a very big stakes poker game. The game will involve visiting officers from other parts of the army. This is an exceptionally dangerous situation. There are no towns for miles around. If he is caught cheating, he could simply disappear into the bayou. He makes an excuse for bringing me. The excuse is that we are on duty together, and the duties are assigned in pairs. I am not to play. I am to sit near the entrance to the tent, minding my business. Just another soldier in the middle of the night. If anything goes wrong, I am to run to the nearest military police area and bring help. That is, I am to bring the military police to have him arrested and to prevent the alternative, which is to prevent him from being killed by men with virtually unlimited power. I suggest that he might opt out of this game on some excuse, but that is not the way poker players think about things. Fortunately, the game goes uneventfully. The young black man takes away a lot of money. The generals curse their luck. I pay close attention to the progress of the game and think about the most direct route to the military police area. Afterwards, I go back to my tent. I don't sleep for the rest of the night. For the duration of the war games, 6 weeks, his wife and my wife go back to our homes in Michigan. After the war games, we are given a 2-week leave. He and I drive his car to Michigan to pick up our wives. On the way, somewhere in Arkansas, we come to a very long and gradual curve to our left. The curve must be a mile long. The road has no shoulders. On both sides, it simply pitches about 12 feet into a swamp. Coming towards us on the curve is another car. Very gradually it moves into our lane. Apparently the other driver is asleep. The strategy of changing lanes is out of the question. If the other driver wakes up and reacts automatically to being in the wrong lane, the result is a head-on collision. We slow down, but the other car keeps coming at a high speed. My friend makes a decision. He says quietly, "Hang on." He slams the brakes into a full skid and pulls the steering wheel sharply to the right. At the last possible moment, the driver in the other car awakens and does exactly the same maneuver. two cars are skidding sideways towards each other at a very high speed. Within a few yards of collision, my friend and the other driver both pull sharply to the left. The two cars do a kind of do-si-do counterclockwise and are both in their own lanes and well past each other. We stop. The car moves about 200 yards down the road and stops. The driver gets out of the car and looks at us for a minute or so. He gets back in his car and drives away. My friend says, "Can you drive for a while?" We don't speak for the next hour. I realize while driving that his maneuver has another meaning. Perhaps this is circumstantial, but it could be instinctively purposeful. The maneuver puts him directly between me and the collision. If it is purposeful, it is an inexplicably courageous thing to do on his part. The rest of the trip goes as planned. We never speak of the near accident again. At this point, I should say that in his spare time with the army and the quartet, my friend begins to take flying lessons at a small airport near the base. I go with him a few times to watch him take off and land. Our army duties end. I don't see him for another 13 years. My picture appears in a newspaper when I take a new job in California. He calls me on the telephone and we meet for dinner in San Francisco. He seems virtually unchanged. He is well-dressed as usual. He tells me that he is a pilot for a major airline. He flies between the United States and various cities in Asia. We talk about getting together, but of course I know this is not going to happen. Years pass. On a flight back to the United States from Europe, I hear my friend's name announced as captain, and I hear his voice telling the passengers that everything is going to be okay. I ask the flight attendant if she will speak to the captain and ask him if he remembers a person by my name. About 4 hours later, he touches me on the shoulder and invites me to go back to the galley of the plane for a drink. We both drink a Coca-Cola. He tells me that he is about to retire from flying because of his age. He tells me he is still playing the drones as a hobby. He says that he would like to come to New York occasionally to take lessons from a professional. I say that I know musicians working in jazz. I will arrange for the lessons. It is a warm but short meeting. When the plane lands, I half expect him to be there to talk more about the lessons. But he is not in the waiting area, and I know that I will probably never see him again. He is certainly retired by now. Probably playing cards with a few friends occasionally. But in those next few years, before his retirement, whenever I leave the United States, I always hope that he is the pilot. If anything goes wrong, I want to be in good hands.
KFJC. That was Robert Ashley's Insatiable Desire. That is from an album called Concrete, out on Lovely Music Limited. Once again, I am Cousin Mary. I'm doing the special music from Mills College. And Robert Ashley was the director of the Center for Contemporary Music from 1969 to 1981. Well, up next, I'm going to play something from Pandit Pran Nath. He was an Indian vocalist and composer. He was on the faculty of Mills College from 1973 to 1984. I'm going to follow it with a composer that felt he was an influence. We're going to hear Dira Dira Tana and Raga Bahavravi. This is from a collection called Music from Mills. The label is Mills College Music Program. This is the Wave of the West, KFJC. 89.7 KFJC. We're listening to Prandit Pranas, Dira Dira Tana, and Raga Bhairavi. This is from the collection Music from Mills. He was on the faculty of Mills College in Oakland from 1973 to 1984. And in 1971, Terry Riley joined the Mills College faculty to teach Indian classical music. He said his most influential teacher was Prandit Pranath. So let's hear Terry Riley's In C, not the whole thing. It's 76 minutes long. But I'm not sure I see the influence, or I should say hear the influence, but that's up to you. I'm Cousin Mary doing a Mayhem special, Music from Mills on KFJC. Thank you. 89.7 KFJC. We're listening to Terry Riley's NC. That album is out on New Albion. I love this. I'd like to listen to all 76 minutes, but I foolishly thought I could do all the Mills College musicians in 4 hours, 2 2-hour chunks, so got to keep moving along. Next, I'm going to play another cut from Music from Mills, that collection. This is David Rosenboom's In the Beginning, Etude 1. David Rosenboom is known for his research on brainwave music, and he was the director of the CCM, Center for Contemporary Music, from 1981 to 1990. I chose this because it's for trombones, and there is a trombonist, unfortunately no longer with us. Toyoji Tomita is one of the trombonists, and in one of those funny coincidences, I knew his mother. So let's go with the trombones here on KFJC. I'm Cousin Mary. The Mayhem Special is Music from Mills. Thank you. 89.7 KFJC. That was David Rosenboom's In the Beginning Etude 1 for trombones. That is from the collection Music from Mills out on the Mills College Music Program label. I'm Cousin Mary. This is a special, the beginning of the month of mayhem, music from Mills College. Next up, going to play section 2 of Luciano Berio's Sinfonia. He was an Italian composer who was noted for his pioneering work in electronic music. In 1962, he was invited by Darius Milhaud to take a teaching post at Mills College. Let's hear it on the Wave of the West, KFJC.